And that would be Carl Dietrich of Terrafugia or Fugia?
Terrafugia. Terrafugia.
Okay, yeah. Who's created a bit of a stir. A new wrinkle on an idea that has been around a while.
Yeah, it has. Molt Taylor tried it many, many years ago.
He almost convinced Henry Ford to try it.
It was a stellar effort, but it wasn't quite practical.
Oh, no. It's very practical. It just, you know, they couldn't handle traffic lights. They couldn't figure that out,
yeah,
I guess.
It just never took off.
Anyway, let's get to Carl.
I'm sorry.
Good morning, sir.
We're in follow-roll mode here.
Yeah, but, that's all right. You guys were on a roll, so
yeah,
I figured I would just let it go.
Don't interrupt the thought.
Yeah, really. So you are with Terrafugia.
That's right.
Very interesting prototype you have over there in your booth.
Thank you.
No, it's no longer a prototype. It's flying.
Well, it's still a prototype.
It's a flying prototype. It's an experimental for research and development.
Told you.
Okay, get technical with me.
We do that a lot. We get technical.
Now, I understand. Yeah. You've got like 30-plus flights on it already?
Yeah, we've got about, 28 flights is the exact number. And we found some things with the vehicle that we want to tweak for the next prototype.
Cup holders?
Yeah, we got to add cup holders.
Right.
We've got to, the cruise control, all that. No.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. The stereo.
Right.
All that good stuff.
It's we did learn a whole lot about, things that worked, things that didn't work with this vehicle. You come out with a concept and, you've got some ideas about the way you think it'll work. And you test it and you test it and you fix some things and you test it some more. And eventually you get to the point where, okay, I think we've learned as much as we're going to learn from this one. We need to move on to the design of the next vehicle. So that's kind of where we are right now.
Now you've got a folding wing mechanism that's quite unique.
Very, very. Actually, you mentioned Molt Taylor's Aero Car before. Mm-hmm. And it took one person about 20 minutes to convert Molt Taylor's Aero Car between flying and driving. If you had a couple people, you could do it in about 5 minutes, maybe a little less if you were really good at it.
Really good, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a video up at the EAA Museum up the hill here that shows Molt Taylor's Aero Car. They've got an actual prototype up there. And in the video, they kind of play a little fast-forward clip of a few people kind of converting it from flying to driving. And when I went up there and I saw that, I was like, man, in the time that it took this clip to play and fast forward, our vehicle would be done because our vehicle converts from flying to driving in about 20 seconds. So it really that's kind of the big thing that I think is set Terrafugia's transition apart from kind of the history, the legacy concepts that have been out there.
Well, the big difference is that you've got hydraulically folding wings versus Molt Taylor, which was completely hand operated.
Right, yeah. Ours are an electromechanical system, and it's just done with the push of a button. You have to be stopped on the ground and shut down your engine and then enter in a personal identification number on a keypad in the cockpit. It just gives you an extra level of safety and security. And when you do that, a couple solenoids energize, which lets you move a manual lever that locks and unlocks the wings. And you manually unlock the wings and then push a couple toggle switches that fold the wings up automatically.
Neat.
Now, how do you get in and out of the car when it's in car mode? Because don't the wings come up along the sides?
No, they do come up along the sides, but they're behind the pilot. It's sort of a unique thing about the configuration of this vehicle. It actually is very easy to get in and out of. It's like getting in and out of a car. So the wings are just behind the front doors, the side doors.
Okay, you're talking about the number two prototype that you're doing design and hopefully construction on here very soon. What are some of the changes that you're going to make between number one and number two?
Well, one of the big things is that we wound up in flight tests. We realized we were getting less lift than we expected out of the canard in front. We have a big constraint on the design of the vehicle because we're trying to make it fit inside a single car garage. So when we designed the vehicle, we had to design it to be about less than about 80 inches wide. And that meant that we wound up with a very three-dimensional flow around the nose of the vehicle. And we had big front wheels also near the trailing edge of the canard. And it turned out that there was a lot of flow interference there. Not a huge surprise, but it wound up getting less lift than we expected. And so if you look carefully at some of the pictures of our vehicle in flight, you notice that there's a lot of up elevator. And the test pilot was having to pull a lot of up elevator because we were getting less lift out of the canard up in the front of the vehicle. So one of the big changes that you'll notice is that we're going to move that canard farther away from those front wheels. We're actually making the front wheels a little bit smaller, pulling them back a little, moving the Canard up and away. So that's a big thing. And we've also brought on some more sophisticated analysis tools. When we started this program, basically I was in grad school at MIT and basically had no money to to get any very sophisticated tools. We used a lot of spreadsheet models and vortex lattice codes and stuff like that. So a lot of napkins, a lot of whiteboard drawings. The design was really isolated with those tools that we had available at the time. And we put it together, and it worked pretty well. I mean, the thing flies, and it drives, and it converts between the two in 30 seconds, but there are definitely areas that could use improvement. And with that, we're going to, now that we've kind of gotten a lot of exposure and a lot of publicity, we've been able to get some sponsors on board. And one of our sponsors is Ansys, that makes a CFD package called Fluent, which is a computational fluid dynamics package. So it's a much more sophisticated tool that we didn't have access to before. So that's pretty exciting. So we should be able to get it right, really, the next time we go out there with a tweaked design.
Oh, we can't wait to see that. Whose power plant are you running?
We're running the Rotax 912S 100 horsepower version.
Rear wheel drive, front wheel drive?
Front wheel drive on the ground. Yeah, the prop is disengaged and locked in place.
Okay. Well, here's a question. You guys are I believe I read somewhere that you guys have got to do a double certification. Not only do you have to have this thing certified for the FAA, but you've also got to meet the federal crashworthiness.
Emission standards.
Yeah. So it sounds to me like you guys really between a rock and a hard place here.
It's a really narrow road that we're trying to navigate between all the different sets of standards. One of the things that we did a few years back was basically I had the distinct pleasure of reading through Part 571, the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, and kind of going through with a highlighter and, you know, saying, okay, this is going to apply. This is going to be a problem. We better deal with this, yada, 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 go through everything.
Yeah,
good. And it's a lot. I mean, the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards is...
The word onerous comes to mind.
No doubt about it. The thing that really made us think that this might be possible to do now as opposed to 10 years ago, something like that, is the light sport aircraft rule. Because I was familiar with Part 23, means of certifying an aircraft. And before the light sport rule came out, there were a lot more parts of Part 23 that fundamentally conflicted with Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards. You know, like one set would require, Part 23 would require, oh, you must use an aircraft tire, a certified aircraft tire. And then Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards say you must use a certified passenger car tire, you know, all
right,
these things.
DOT approved.
Those things are just in opposition, in direct conflict. With light sport, it's not as specific. It's you must use something that works to these design standards, you know, that... If you can prove and have confidence, if you can certify as a manufacturer that this is going to work for this application, and it meets these requirements, these loading scenarios, yada yada, that are laid out in the ASTM standards, then you can use it. So we don't have to use a certified aircraft tire for that. And that's just an example, but it's one of the reasons why we thought, hey, this could be an opportunity to try this again and maybe make it work commercially this time. So that's what got us going. And and, you know, certainly that I would say the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards are a lot more detailed. And we've gone down to Washington, D.C. on a couple different occasions, met with folks at the NHTSA, which is the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration,
mm-hmm.
the branch of the DOT that governs the Federal Motor Vehicle Safety Standards, the way the FAA governs the FARs. And fortunately, they've been very receptive to the public good argument that we put forward for a vehicle like this, which is, look, we've got an opportunity here to bring all of this new safety technology that's been developed in the automotive world and try to incorporate the best parts of that into the light sport aircraft fleet. And that sort of argument, and also, you know, telling them that, look, this is a really small sector. This is not, you know, your General Motors. This is not your Honda, your Toyota, whatever. This is not... You know, this is not going to affect millions and millions of people. This is going to affect this small number of people, but it has the potential to improve safety for those people. So if we can do that, there is a very compelling public good argument. They've been very receptive to that. And they actually have a process at the NHTSA for low-volume manufacturers that can show financial hardship, that it would, you know, take them gazillions of dollars to go through the full crash test program that, you know, the major manufacturers go through. They have an exemption process by which you can get granted basically an extension. They never grant you a waiver. They never say you don't have to ever comply with this, but they can give you more time. And if they can give you more time, you can amortize your costs over a long period of time, and it brings down the capital requirements for us to something that's manageable, and it winds up just saying it winds up being possible to do, basically, which is something that's really nice. If they didn't have that, it would be really, really hard, if not impossible, to do that. But they do have that, and light sport rules come out, and so between those two things, we think we can make it work.
Okay, real quick, why would I want to buy your rotable aircraft?
Well, the four largest obstacles to the more widespread use of general aviation: weather sensitivity, high cost, limited mobility on the ground at the majority of the 5,000 public use airports around the country, and long door-to-door travel time. The transition rotable aircraft really addresses every one. It's the only light sport aircraft that allows you to continue your travels when conditions go to IMC, instrument conditions. You can divert to the nearest airport, fold up your wings, drive safely under the weather. You can keep your vehicle at home in your garage instead of having to rent a hangar, so it saves pilots money. It also runs on super unleaded automotive gasoline. You can also run it on 100 low lead, but the engine actually slightly prefers the super unleaded, the high octane stuff, which is better for the environment and less expensive than 100 low lead. And of course, your ground transportation is taken care of. And because you're spending less time arranging for ground transportation and arranging for tie down and shuffling bags between a couple different vehicles, it actually saves you time at the airport on either end of your trip. So even though you may be cruising a little bit slower in the air, you make up for it with the time savings on the ground. So those are kind of the summary reasons why you might be interested in a transition.
Okay. Flight envelope, cruising speeds. If you're shooting at LSA, then you're limited to 132 knots. No, it's not knots.
120 knots. 120 knots or 138 miles an hour. Yeah.
Right.
We're going to be cruising probably around 100 knots. So we're not pushing the envelope.
You're not in any danger of the LSA barrier.
We're not in any danger of pushing the envelope there. You know, most of our customers just really like the added flexibility and functionality of the vehicle and the extra freedom that it provides them. And they're not worried about burning a hole in the sky or anything like that.
Okay, is this aimed at a pilot like me who has virtually no time at all and would be able to fly the machine?
It should, according to our test pilot, it handles really nicely in the air. You know, we had, aside from the elevator deflection thing, once he got it up, it handled just like any other light sport aircraft. So, you know, it certainly is a possibility that people could start with a vehicle like this. You know, we'll see. We've got a couple more years of development work to do. And right now, most of our customers are people who have been flying for a while. We do have a number of customers. About 5% of our customers are not currently pilots, but intend to become pilots in order to operate this vehicle.
So. Oh, very good. Very good. Thank you for joining us, sir.
No, thank you for having me on.
Carl,
appreciate
it's been good talking to you. Good luck with Terra Fuji, and I know that we'll be keeping an eye on you courtesy of EAA, and I know AOPA also covers you as well. You guys have made some history here, I think.
Yeah, we'll see.
I do believe the future is bright for the Terra Fuji.
Thank you.